carnivore religions, really expensive phones, and I gotta pee! All that and more on this episode of Android App Addicts. Everybody, welcome back to Android App Addicts, episode 535. This is the show where we talk about Android apps, Android hardware, the gamey thing, the Switch, that's it, the Nintendo Switch, and whatever else happens to tickle the mind of the great one, door-to-door geek, Mr. Steve McLaughlin. My name is Mark, he's Door. Welcome, everybody.
Hey, Mark, I completely brained out, and I forgot. Did we say this show is brought to you by Chocolate Field?
Not yet. I was just about to do that. Yeah.
We've not.
You weren't listening, and that's okay. A lot of people don't listen. My job, actually, on the show is not to be listened to. That's the thing that you brought me on for.
I swear I'm trying.
So, Door started a while back dedicating shows, if that's the right word, shouting out to our faithful Patreon supporters. And this week, Chuck, this show is for you. Chuck Litchfield, prolific contributor in terms of emails and app suggestions, and also a supporter via Patreon. Thanks, Chuck. This show's for you.
And I'll add, just a hell of a nice guy. He I didn't tell you about this, did I, Mark? He sent me a link to some website I never heard of before, saying it offered a 16 gig of internal storage, 4 gig of RAM smartphone, LTE compatible on US carriers, for $45.
Okay.
I bought it. So I bought it. 3 weeks later, I get an imitation Gucci hat in the mail. But that wasn't his fault, because he told me there's no way this can be real, can it? I said, well, let's find out. No, it wasn't real. Turned out it wasn't real. And he did just send me a link tonight to another phone. This was a real brand, but it was a brand we haven't heard of yet in the US or even in Europe, I believe. $150 camera supposedly coming out next year with, like, you know, 4 gigs of RAM. Quite a solid looking device, but we'll have to wait and see. And Chuck is in the greater, maybe the greatest Northwest, maybe I'll say, to where when I get up there to go see a podcasting event or a conference for Linux or whatever, he's always there, and it's a hell of a good time. So if you're in the Northwest later this month, Linux Fest Northwest, up in Washington, unbelievably nice people, because they're all under the influence of, you know, what now is legal up there. Great weather, seafood, it's okay. Just don't get the crab cake and you'll be happy.
I'm from Atlanta, so, you know, crab cakes are frozen here, so I'm sure it's better there anyway.
Well, and I did hear, I can't remember who it was. It was like the guy who committed suicide, the foodie guy.
Tony Bourdain.
It was almost like him, really smart food guy. And he said he firmly believes every time you go to a city and they're famous for that food, that's the absolute last food you should eat at that
place. Alton Brown says that too. They stop caring, right? Why put any effort into it if everybody's going to come here for Philly cheesesteaks, right? Why put any effort into it?
Well, and that was going to be my example. The worst Philly cheesesteak I had in my life was in Philadelphia, where they say they make the best cheesesteaks and they put Cheese Whiz on the damn things. Just not appetizing whatsoever. So here, Maryland is supposedly known for great crab cakes. The dirty secret is come to Maryland and get the fried chicken. We make more fried chicken per capita than any state in the U.S. and we consume more fried chicken than any state in the U.S. per like capita. So it should be good.
Best crab cake I ever had in my life was in Washington, D.C. So, you know, right up in that area. Absolutely, hands down, best I ever had. That was in 2000, the year 2000, 19 years ago. I still remember that crab cake. It was that good. And it was at a dive bar. I mean, it's one of those places where you go in, you sit at this old wooden counter, and there's peanuts on the thing, and crab cake. And it was amazing. I have no idea. I don't remember where it was. I don't remember the name of the place, but I remember the experience.
Well, it probably isn't even in business anymore. And I'll say, to me, the most important thing about a crab cake is, was it handmade? If it was handmade, then you know there's a little bit more care going into it. So the probability of it being better is good.
It wasn't battered in breadcrumbs and deep fried. You know, I don't I don't mind when restaurants do that, but that is not a crab cake. That is a croquette of some sort. And, you know, it's just, I don't trust anything that, that comes inside something that's been deep fried like that.
Yeah. Broiled is the way to get your crab cake.
All right. That was odd.
It was, but it could have been worse.
I just want to do a little diversion here, as if this whole show isn't diversion. I mean, we've been 7 minutes of diversion so far. But first off, Dore, you're looking amazing. It's been a few weeks since I've seen you. Every time I see you, you look thinner. You look healthier. You know, it's I just got to say it. You look good.
It sucks, Mark. I'm starving. Yeah. Every night I go to bed, I'm like, oh, it hurts. Maybe if I just ate something small, it would help.
So in my own weight loss journey, you know, I've been very public about that for a while now. At my heaviest, I was somewhere over 500 pounds. I don't honestly know where that was because my scale stopped at 500. It was in excess of 500, probably, I'm guessing, around 515 to 520. I was a big old fat dude. I mean, I'm 6'4", so I wasn't as dumpy as some people, and most people didn't believe I weighed that much. Anyway, all of that to be said, I bought some new clothes for Easter, and I'm not a clothes guy. I've been just folding over the clothes that are too big, you know, and just wearing them. The pants that I bought last week were 8 inches smaller than the pants that I used to wear. And so I don't, damn, you know, I don't talk about that sort of stuff a lot, but that's a milestone that I wanted to brag on a little bit. I've lost 8 inches in the last couple of years.
That's good. See, and that's, I don't want to step on the scale kind of thing, because one of the things I know is, look, going on a scale every day really is nothing more than a way to just feel bad about yourself, because during the day, your weight is constantly changing up and down. So the logic is, if you don't eat at the same time every day, go to the bathroom at the same time every day, and then weigh yourself at the same time every day, you're going to get some not completely accurate readings kind of thing. So I don't even go that. But I do notice when I got to cinch the belt. I noticed when I had to buy a belt, and then I noticed when I had to cinch a belt.
Yeah, so overall, I'm down about 145 pounds. Again, I don't know exactly how much because I don't know my top weight, but it's in that neighborhood.
Well, and I'm a firm believer in this too, Mark. Slow and steady wins the race. You know, my logic was quite literally eating like 2,000 to 2,600 calories a day. And then what I was trying to do was every day just eat like 10 less calories, 15 less calories, until it got down to like a more normal number. But it still hurts. I mean, I'm starving every damn day.
All right.
But more importantly, I saw some really good pictures come across my notification shade. One of them looked like it was almost an homage to Endgame. It looked almost like you made a wooden version of...
I sort of accidentally did that. It is... As I've talked about on the show, I'm working on a project a week with my goal to make 50 separate things through the course of this year. And this week's project, I needed a wooden mallet, because sometimes when you're woodworking, you need to flatten things out as you're going up or whatever. And if you use a metal hammer, you dent the wood. If you use a rubber hammer, you don't get enough force to really do what you need to do. So you need a wooden mallet. So I thought, you know, I'm making stuff. I'll make a mallet. So I grabbed some scraps. The biggest thing I had was about 6 inches long by a half inch thick. It was all just little pieces of scrap. I glued them all up and made this thing that was sort of an amorphous blob on the end of a stickish sort of thing. And then I took it over to the bandsaw and started shaping it. And when I was done, I kind of had something that looked a little bit like Mjolnir. And when I was done, I looked at it. I was like, I'm such a geek. You know, I did that without even thinking about it. But yeah, I made a hammer. It's a nice looking hammer.
Well, A, it works. That's all that matters. Okay, it works. Two, I'll say this. It looks to me to be a great size of a mallet, because with that size, you don't need to put any weight behind, you don't need to put any force behind it. You let the weight drive it, and then so you won't damage things, and you'll get the force.
And it's one of the pictures. I've shared the album before. I'm sure Dore can put the link in the notes for this one. But I put everything I make out on a Google Photos album. But anyway, one of the pictures, I made sure I put it in my hand because I needed some scale there. It's a big, meaty hand. That handle for a hammer is about the size of a full-on axe handle. But in my big, meaty hand, that's what it needed to be. Probably would be uncomfortable for almost anyone else in the world. But when you're making it yourself, you can do whatever you want. So it's a nice, big, clunky piece of hammer. I'm a hammer made out of different pieces of wood. I'm pretty proud of it. Go check it out.
Well, and then the second question is, the first thing that was made was a very nice lamp, but the name of the tubes, you used a very specific type of tube for the lighting. Is that, it's not a Pixie tube.
Edison bulb.
Yeah. Edison bulb. Ah, I couldn't think of the name because I first just saw it, I thought, oh, that was cool. Then when the picture was a lot closer, I was like, oh, okay, now I see. Okay, that's cool.
So that, I just made your classic steampunk. I mean, they're all over the place. Etsy sells them by the thousands, but this one's mine. And it's made out of pipes and stuff. And what I wanted to do was make the knob where you turn, it's a dimmer. I wanted to actually make that a water faucet valve so that you turn on the power in like you're turning the water on. But I couldn't find one that was the right size. So in the end, I just used an old guitar knob I have laying around. A lot of my stuff is just made out of whatever I have. I don't want to go out and buy new stuff. So, thanks for noticing. I've really enjoyed making this sort of stuff. I took that one to my office and put it on my desk there, and my kids are kind of mad at me. So I'm probably going to have to make another one to keep at the house.
Well, I will not ever lie to you purposefully. I'll say that. It's like I hate Instagram because I have it installed on Island for work. So it's a work profile, doesn't access any of my personal information, but then I can do stuff for the Makers podcast, right? And I've noticed they are very good at knowing what time to send a notification over. So if I see that notification come over that there's new pictures, I look at it. If it's not a good time, I'm not looking at them right now. I'm trying to diagnose this server. Telling off another employee, whatever, that's what I do. But if my time's open, then I definitely go peek at it.
And, there've been some comments from, the community, and I appreciate that. Those, keep me motivated to keep doing more stuff. So thanks, guys.
And I'll say, I forgot again, I'm the one to blame, but, Ivor sent a video message in that I did forward to, Eric's family. There's no, we are the anti like broadcast network style podcast, like unadulteratedly anti corporate media conglomerate wannabe network. And guys like Ivor sending in messages like that to me just reinforces, that, got definitely more emails because I will say we didn't try to make it a spectacle, what was going on with Eric, and we didn't try to make it a big spectacle when he passed away. We just let people know, and some people, they didn't know for a week or 2 weeks. More people are still catching the news. You can still support Eric. His name is still in the notes, and his name will be in the notes, as long as I remember to keep putting his name in the notes, with a link to his GoFundMe account where you can help his family. Try to deal with life after Eric. I did do a 24-hour live stream April the 13th through April the 14th, and I am very happy to say we did make it over the $10,000 hurdle. We're now at $11,153. So I definitely thank all the Podnutsians for all their help with that. Yeah, so in like typical Eric fashion, I can tell you right now, if hypothetically, I was the one who passed away, Eric would definitely want to keep doing the show, keep communicating with everybody, especially guys like Ivor and Chuck Litchfield and everybody who supports the show, for that. So I definitely thank you guys. And do not forget, I just ask everyone, support those who support you.
That's one of the things that, captivates me about podcasting in general. This is such an intimate thing that we do. You're listening to me right now. There's a very good chance that my voice is being driven right into your ears, with earbuds. I am, sharing your headspace, and it's a very intimate thing. And, Eric just, 4 years, 5 years, I don't even know how long he was, came on this show and just, was just Eric. He didn't do anything other than just be Eric, and people love him for it. And I love that about podcasting, that it is this, intimate, real, raw sort of thing. You're not going to get these hyper polished podcasts out of us. If you hadn't figured that out by now, you're a little slow. You're going to get things from us that are just, simple and real. And it's, water cooler talk. And, it's just inspirational to see these things. So, we appreciate that you keep sending the mail to AAA@podnuts.com, cause we get to share in that, with you. I hope that you're also contacting Eric's family through and, donating through the GoFundMe and all that sort of stuff. But, keep sending those emails and comments, to us, because together we get to mourn the loss of our friend. And again, that's the power of a podcast.
Yeah, and real heavy, hard, thick, contrasty air quotes, real podcasters live and thrive off of feedback and communications. Fake podcasters just want ad revenue and they don't answer any emails. And I'll say I am very, the most PC way I can put it, I am unbelievably upset. Trust me when I tell you, if Podnuts was not a ultra family friendly content network, I would have said something very different right there. But I am very upset at, I did the 24 hour live stream. It was the first thing I did in a very long time that before I hit go live, I was literally physically shaking and felt sick to my stomach. Not because it was a 24 hour stream, just because I knew I'm going to now spend some time to talk about Eric. I did not hit local record, and for some reason it's not accessible or playable on YouTube, and I have no idea why. I tried to contact them through at least three or four different avenues, haven't got a single answer back yet, because why would I? It's YouTube. They don't answer me. I'm out of their monetization loop, so I'm definitely low on the totem pole, because I wanted to take the video, chunk it up into like hour long videos and put it back up, because who in their right mind would sit there and watch a 24 hour video? You know what I mean?
Not I.
Nobody.
And I'm not even in my right mind.
So,
yeah. So let me be the first
to
bring an app to the show tonight. And in stark contrast, the guy who never brings an app, I'm going to be the first one. It's probably a repeat because it's been around for a long time. But as most geeks know, in fact, right now across most of North America, the Avengers Endgame, the end of a 10-year storytelling saga, has been released. And the 3 hour and just under 1 minute runtime has me thinking about, when I go to see it Saturday, how is my 47-year-old bladder going to make it through this movie? And so I would like to bring back the show the app Run P. By Polygeek Entertainment. And Run P is a crowdsourced application where people go watch the movie, and then they indicate in the app a time where you're not going to miss too much if you go. And I checked this app out years ago, about a decade ago, and it was just sort of, you know, just bland. It did its job. It has really grown over the years. One of my favorite new features about it is the timer mode. So it'll tell you as soon as the Marvel logo stops, that 17-minute Marvel logo that they run at the beginning of every movie, hit this button, and then we will buzz your phone when it's okay to go run pee. Not only that, but there will be a synopsis of what you missed. So while you're in there holding onto it with one hand, you can be scrolling through your phone with the other hand, seeing what you're missing while you're peeing. So naturally there are spoilers there, but it keeps you up to whatever with the movie. And so you can come back in and not miss anything. So Run P, it's used to be a free app. Now it is a free to download app, and you have to verify your email with them. And when you verify your email, you get 2 free movies. And after that, it's $1 a movie, which is totally worth it. Or you can pay $14 and get infinite movies forever. But $1 a movie to know when to pee, I'm totally fair with that. I misrepresented that. You don't have to pay anything at all. If you want to watch video ads, 3 video ads gets you, maybe it's 6. There's a certain amount of video ads gets you a movie. So you don't have to pay anything.
Well, I appreciate the fact they offer that as an option, is what I'll say. But I'll tell you this, if every movie turns out to be 3 hours long, and if I went to even 2 movies a year, I would happily just pay the $14 to get it over with. Because 3 hours, there ain't no way you don't have to go to the product.
Just,
is all I got to say.
That comes with just getting older, you know. And my favorite thing to do now is go to these movie theater restaurant things, right? So I am actively eating and drinking. And even if you're not there, you're probably getting a soda and a popcorn. So you're actively drinking during this movie. And yeah, you're going to need to pee.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's 2,967 reviews, free to download, ads, in-app purchases, which I do those in-app purchases. 4.0 average reviews. Updated April 4th, 2019, only 33 megs in size, which I'll say, you know, isn't bad. 100,000 plus installs, current version 5.0.05. Yeah, this is the kind of thing, if you go to the movies at all and you do not want to miss what's going on, you have to have something like this. Now, there are competitors on the market, but this is the one I think that's been around the longest, aka it's the most trustworthy. But now here's the real question mark. If I'm not mistaken, I believe there's 22 movies in this timeline story, whatever you want to call it. Can you name all 22?
No.
Oh, come on. Yeah, you thought you were a nerd.
I
mean,
I have seen them all. Most of them multiple times. But no, I couldn't name them off the top of my head.
Well, then I'll also ask, is Avengers your favorite slice of these 22 movies, or do you have a different
favorite? The original Avengers is my favorite superhero movie of all times, full stop. The first Avengers movie. The second one is Winter Soldier. So two of my favorite superhero movies are in this arc. So yes.
Well, and to me, it was very obvious. They definitely put, I don't want to say more attention, more money, more whatever, more something into that set of movies because it's the Avengers. It's, you know, like X-Men, but, you know, Avengers. I'll just say like this. I was genuinely, genuinely shocked at how much I liked Ant-Man. I'm just saying. Maybe it's the Latino guy with his long stories. I don't know. That was the movie series that I watched. I haven't watched all 22. Maybe I've watched 13, 14 of them, maybe total. But I was very surprised at how much I actually liked Ant-Man. And it doesn't help. It didn't hurt that, what's his name, was the main actor. I'm not good with names tonight.
And it's not coming to me either. Paul Rudd.
He's the Paul Rudd, yeah, the unbelievably nice guy.
I don't share that opinion of that movie. I think that movie was a low C grade at best, maybe even a C minus. Just not a good movie, not a fun movie. But having said that, I own it and have watched it at least three times. So even the worst movie, which I guess the worst movie would be Thor: Dark World. That one was bad. And the first Captain America. That one was really bad.
It was, but I still love Red Skull. So you know,
yeah,
I had to watch it. You know,
yeah. Captain America: the case of the vanishing accent.
But
anyway.
Yeah. Well, I guess it could have been worse.
It has been worse. Absolutely. Scarlet Witch has had multiple accents throughout the series as well. It's a thing. But no, it's a good time to be a superhero fan. What I wonder is where they're going to go next. I mean, we already know there are multiple, like I think there's six in production right now. At some point, we, the nerds who grew up on comics are going to outgrow this sort of stuff. And I don't think they're cultivating the next generation. I mean, my daughter, particularly my middle daughter, is all into that. So she's going to be one of them, but I don't think it's going to be $1 billion revenues in the future.
Or like me might just get like sick and tired of the number of them coming out, you know, kind of like Star Wars. I will say everybody I know watched that Star Wars trailer, Rise of Skywalker, and was like, you know, some people avoid spoilers, avoid trailers because I'm just watching this trailer because I really don't care about this movie anymore. I think they hit maximum saturation.
Yeah. Sometimes when you're just squeezing the golden goose, it doesn't work. What you get are broken eggs. And yeah, I'm kind of over it. I waited 20 years for it. And then when it came back, it was, I mean, Force Awakens was really good, and I really liked the second one. The name is escaping me, but the ancillary movies, the Solo,
The Last Jedi,
The Last Jedi. I really liked that one, but Solo and the other Star Wars stories, I think are tarnishing the brand more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, they made it very clear after this movie they're going to go to more episodic content, you know. Like, and hey, with Disney Plus coming out, that'll be a great place to host that content and make tons and tons and tons.
If they mined the Rebels universe and made good movies out of those, there's a whole bunch of stuff there. There's lots of really good stuff. And what bothers me is they're not using the really good stuff. They're writing mediocre stuff instead of using the really good stuff that's out there.
I know. I'll just say this. I'm old. And I said to my wife and to my kids, these latest movies aren't for me. They're not. They're trying to get the next generation hooked again. You know, Force Awakens, Last Jedi, unbelievable production quality is what I'll say. Stories were okay. Acting was pretty good. But, you know, like Snoke. I mean, can you get a bigger letdown than Snoke?
Really great character and then gone.
Possible great character and then nothing. Yeah, I mean, you know, so I guess I'm going to go back and watch Highlander again.
Don't. It'll ruin it. I just did a couple of months ago, and I regret having done that. Yeah, don't do it.
Oh, no.
It doesn't hold up at all.
Oh, crikey. Okay, I guess I'll watch Fifth Element.
That one holds up, because it wasn't great to begin with. You know, it was this... Its greatness wasn't from the production value or from the acting. The greatness came from the whole of what it was, you know.
Yes, yes, yes. Everything put together. Right.
Have you got an app for us, my friend?
Well, the first thing I want to bring is not an app. I will say we've made soft predictions on this show all the time. And the first thing I want to talk about actually isn't in the notes, because I can't find anything worth even documenting about it. And this is the Samsung Galaxy Fold fiasco. Obviously, okay, I said years ago, there's only one way for Samsung to go, because they were number one, and the answer was down. And the question isn't when they're going to go down, or, you know, if they're going to go down, it's a question of when they're going to go down. We have the Samsung Galaxy Fold fiasco. They send out review units to major players, three of them in the first 24 hours, four or five of them in the first 36 hours report publicly their phone broke. You know, screens were coming off, big bulges happening in the middle. All kinds of dumb, stupid stuff. And the whole journalist people are just freaking out. Oh, this is the end, blah, 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 blah. And I'll just say, who cares? Really? We had the same manufacturer sell phones that blew up and nobody cared. Why are they going to care if a folding phone doesn't fold right or breaks? That's nothing. They already forgot about it. Consumers already forgot about it. So who cares? You know, Samsung hasn't innovated since putting the fingerprint scanner in the home button like 6 years ago. They're not going to innovate. That's not how they make their money. So I just say again, who cares? Other people, and I saw one article that looked promising and it said, will Samsung's failing with the folding phone open up opportunity for other manufacturers? That's a pretty stupid question. I think it's pretty obvious, yes. It goes... other manufacturers the opportunity to not only gain ground, but to gain credibility, but also to innovate how they want, how they like. So, you know, folding phones, I think, will still have some popularity in the next 2 years, but I don't think they're going to hit their full stride for maybe 3 years. And then, you know, will we even have Android? I don't know.
Some form of Android is going to be around for a long time, but will it be the flagship? I don't know.
Well, but this is my prediction. We know Google Stadia is coming. Google I.O. is coming in a couple weeks. That's going to make a lot of news. I extremely expect at least one manufacturer around that same time to announce some more folding phone stuff. Huawei's coming out with theirs in like 2 months or whatever. But this is the thing I think that's going to be the real groundbreaker in this Google I.O. season here in the next couple months. Back in February, they silently made a update to the Google Fuchsia code on GitHub, and they literally labeled it RC. Now, this is just nothing but pure speculation. Nothing but pure speculation. But they literally released a version of it back in February with the title 20190206, obviously, year, month, day. _00_RC01. Typically in development terms, when you see RC everywhere I've ever been, everywhere I've ever looked, RC means release candidate. It means it's getting ready to go live. Time to play around, people. So I would not be shocked. We're also going to see unveiled at Google I.O., everyone keeps saying, is the low budget new Pixel device. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that new low budget Pixel device will not be running Android. It's going to be running Fuchsia. That's what I'm going to go out on a limb and say. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I believe Google sees distinctively in their eyes, Fuchsia is the future. Inline apps, live downloading code and running it in your browser and having basically essentially iframes all over your operating system where connectivity becomes even more important than ever. I think it's going to start to happen this year. I think Fuchsia is coming and developers will still be able to make APK files, still put them on a Google server, but they're going to be delivered in a completely different fashion than how we're used to normal Android.
Now, there comes a time in the life of any OS where you can't go forward. The best you can do is patch and polish. And so, you know, Android's been around a long time. It doesn't surprise me that it's time to look past Android. And Google, to all intents and purposes, has lost Android. I mean, they never really had it. It was developed in an open style. They have they're sort of the maintainers of it, but there's lots of Android out there that isn't Google. Do you think that Fuchsia is going to be all Google all the time and it won't be open sourced?
I think they were very good poker players. The first time they had Androids, they relinquished certain things, expecting that was one of the ways they can gain popularity. You know, they give up the licensing, they give up the complete ownership of it. Here, the code is free, but if you want to put the Google name on it, you have to adhere to this very soft license. They did just renew that license last year to include you have to do releases for X amount of time, blah, 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 blah. There's no doubt in my mind, when Fuchsia comes out, it is going to have an unbelievably more strict licensing agreement. Now, with that stated, I'm sure they're going to be more onerous, but I can also believe they're going to say, to at least to the developer community, it's for you. It's to make sure your code is secure. It's to make sure that your devices are secure. Russia! Oh, so they, you know, so they can try to say that no one's hacking your phone kind of thing. With each release, very slow, mild stepping releases back from Donut, Eclair, Cupcake, all those, Android has slowly gotten more secure and more like iOS. iOS is maturing and becoming slowly giving up rights, giving up powers, giving up admin control to apps, becoming more like Android. Remember, there was a time on iOS you couldn't even copy and paste from app to app. And if that's not secure, I don't know what is. So they're relinquishing security in the name of convenience. Android is giving up convenience in the name of security. You know, so I think it's only a matter of time, but I do think they're going to be much more, I don't want to use the word onerous. I think they're going to be definitely more controlling of the Fuchsia source code compared to the Android source code. You'll still be able to download it and compile it, but there's going to be some secret sauce on those middle servers to make everything run smooth.
I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me to find software hooks that cripple it on non-approved hardware, where you can do it, but the experience will be so suboptimal that only the cheap Chinese tablets would even consider it.
Yes, hardware is getting unbelievably cheap, so it'd be very easy for them to put in a chip that's dedicated, that's copyrighted, that's trademarked, that only does this one thing, but this one thing is actually very essential to speed and performance. But I think Fuchsia is going to take advantage of what a lot of IoT people are calling edge computing. With Stadia, it's one attempt to build out infrastructure farther, literally farther away from the core data center and closer to nodes is the best way I'll put it. Instead of only having two or three places in the U.S., their goal is literally to have like 40 or 50 hubs in the U.S. where there's power and performance at the drop of a dime. Edge computing is basically going to be part of that as well. And most of the time when you're in Fuchsia and you open up or you scroll, what loads is going to be coming straight off one of those edge nodes. Forget 5G. Please stop listening to journalists. Stop listening to tech people talking about how 5G is going to save everything. Just go back like 6 years, listen to the exact same people talking about 4G and LTE. They said nearly the same thing. They promised us 100 times speed improvement. We never got 100 times speed improvement ever. The spec says we can get so much faster with 5G. We'll never get that speed ever. Okay, that's just the way it works. It's just like going to the store, buying the 500 gig hard drive and wondering why you don't have a 500 gig hard drive. You know, marketing and businesses are designed to lie to you in the least offensive way to make money off of you. So, yeah.
5G isn't really even, the current 5G isn't 5G. It's like 4G plus. It's marketing.
Yeah.
It's not an actual new generation in the technology. When real 5G comes about, it will be life-changing in the same way that 3G and 4G were life-changing. I mean, to have the type of data dependency we have right now was unthinkable back in the days before 3G. And so, yeah, it will change things, but it'll be 20 years from now, not 2 years.
Well, and at the same time, and when it does change, we're going to wake up the next day and realize nothing's changed because now we just have a new bottleneck. Instead of the bottleneck being that, it's going to be someplace else. We always have bottlenecks in computers. It's just a question of where's it at. It used to be RAM, then it was processors, then it was video cards. It's always going to be something else. We always have bottlenecks. We always have something to complain over in the world of
computers. I've been doing this long enough, and I'm old enough to remember that when the cell tower that I had access to upgraded to digital. I mean, that was life changing. But like you just said, a week later, it was just part of the background. It didn't change things as dramatically. It was just another building block in the wall that is the structure of modern computing today.
Yeah, and I want to share just three more really quick links. We don't have to talk about this a great deal, but I do believe it's going to be a splash, is what I'll say. OnePlus has done a lot for mid-range pocket computing devices, is the way I'll put it. They've changed the game. They've made other people realign. They've made other companies stop and take notice. They made other companies modify what they do. Even though there's no such company as OnePlus, it's actually Oppo. I've actually owned two Oppo phones now. Pretty good quality. One of them is a rumor saying OnePlus is looking at, they might be able to have this next generation device, the OnePlus 7 series of phones, be available on every major carrier from stores in the U.S. And that was one of the things that you said, Mark. They cannot make it in the U.S. at all, when any significant sales number, unless you can walk into a store and pay for it over 2 years. And I absolutely agree with you. That's the only way they're ever going to see success in this country, because me talking about it will never get, 20 million sales or anything even remotely close.
Yeah, it's not just got to be available. There's got to be incentive for that sales guy to walk you in that general direction, which, right now Samsung and Apple both have that.
Yeah, and it's the law of the numbers. The carriers are like, we can guarantee X amount of sales. Well, then fine, Samsung will give you this much of a discount, aka you'll be making even more profit on every phone. And that's what they have to fight with, and that's not easy. The second one is announcement.
Hold on. You just said something that might be a little groundbreaking. I don't want to just run past it. Maybe that's why the new phones cost so much. So by the time they discount it for the stores to get a kickback, Oppo is actually making the same amount of money per phone.
It's just like cars, Mark. The MSRP of the car is never the price you buy it for, is it?
Yeah, so we've been buying essentially wholesale from OnePlus. I'm holding a OnePlus in my hand right now that I paid, I think, $350 for, and the new one is projected to be closer to more than double that, like $799, that kind of thing. Maybe that's how they get into the stores, is get the stores to sell it at $799, but they're selling it at the stores at $350.
So, and any profit goes to the middleman. Makes sense. I'll say that. Definitely makes sense. Yeah, and it's all about perception when it comes to price with computers. I'm a firm believer in that. The next one is the leak, and none of these are leaks. They're doing this on purpose. OnePlus and the OnePlus 7 and the 7 Pro, OnePlus 7 Pro, which is brand new, will be launching on May the 14th. And if you take a look at the link on Ars Technica, pop-up selfie cam, aka true, like full screen, no notch, no teardrop, no border at the top whatsoever, just pure phone. I gotta say, I think that's pretty damn attractive. And my selfie camera would never pop out if I bought one. I'm pretty sure of that. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
I have taken a dozen or so selfies in my entire life. I mean, I have done it, but very rarely.
Right. I almost took one today just because when I was walking, doing my 5 mile walk, I drove past like a box truck with a funny looking crab logo on the side, but I didn't. Also with the OnePlus models, the low end looks like it's going, no, I'm sorry, the high end is going to have 8 gigs of RAM and 256 gig of storage, where the low end model, I believe it is, there's going to be another model with 12 gigs of RAM and 256 gigs of storage. Oh my. And then the third, that was the third one. And it's the end prices as well, with the high end price being, it looks like $819. Low end price, I believe, is going to be around $700. I just salute OnePlus. Congratulations. You've priced yourself out of my budget.
Good for you. You have made it onto the world stage as a premium hardware supplier. You stood on my back to do it, and I thanked you for the process. I'm done. I can't buy another. I mean, the phone that I have in my hand is not worth $1,000. Spoiler alert, none of the phones are worth $1,000.
Well, even if it was like a BMW of phones, even if you bought the phone and you were guaranteed if it broke in 3 years, you get a brand new phone. I still don't think it's worth $1,000. Even if in guaranteed in 4 years, you'll get the next phone free. I still don't think it's worth $1,000. Maybe if you got two extra for free when you bought it, it'd be worth $1,000, but that's about it.
Or maybe, you know, this is something that we've talked about on our Geek Grant show often. Maybe the fact is these things really are worth $1,000, and we have been undervaluing the labor force and the manufacturing processes for so long that we have forgotten the real cost of goods.
Well, I mean, the only constant in economics and inflation is we're always going to get more bang for our buck, it seems like, for the last 100 years. Yes, back in 1980, whatever, every computer cost $2,000, without a doubt. Every single computer was $2,000. Even the cheap one was like $1,006. Now, for the equivalent kind of computer experience, not computer, but computer experience, you know, compared to what you could do then, it could do now, you're at most spending $600 at maybe. Now, yes, the dollar has also changed value. The old gallon of milk, comparing it versus a gallon of milk then versus a gallon of milk today. If you do that, computers still cost a little bit less. I believe, like you kind of hinted at it in the beginning, I believe a lot of the price of the phone isn't for the phone. It's for the ecosystem and systems around the phone, to support everybody else, to support all the things around it. Because I can tell you, like with my mini computing needs, it's basically using the same smartphone technology. I've seen more than a couple mini computers, Raspberry Pi computers, that literally have Snapdragons in them or Qualcomm chips in them or Samsung Exynos chips in them, which are the phone processors in them. And they're not $200. None of them are. They're all like $80, $120 at the most. RAM, yes, I'm sure if you get 12 gigs of RAM, the bus that's on that board is not mass produced like the same chip to only handle 4 gigs of RAM. So I'm sure that costs more money. I'm sure they cost more money, but I'm also sure if I ordered, you know, 8 million of them like Samsung does or OnePlus does, that there's no way it comes to $1,000. Companies love making money. I can't blame them for it, but you know, they're just trying to prop up because they all believe they're going to reach peak phone here. That's what Apple keeps saying. Peak phone is about to happen. So they're switching to a service-based company. Every other company believes that they're making peak phone here any day now. So we got to make all of our money right now.
I agree. Without a quantum leap in the form factor or, you know, the folding phone, some totally new paradigm is going to have to happen for phones to be relevant 5 years from now. They'll just be commodity pieces of equipment that everybody buys in the same way that the base box PC is today.
Yeah, I'm going to get a whole bunch of facts completely wrong. Okay, let's just, for argument's sake, let's not hold me to the level of accuracy that a president or a congressman is held to. Okay, I'm going to say this inaccurately. Penn Jillette just did a little ditty show where he was in, I can't remember if it was Singapore or Hong Kong. I'm going to say Singapore. And he said he told his manager, every time I go to any country, make sure I have money so I can spend, so I can buy things, so I can do things. So his manager made sure he had money. He said it was something, you know, 5,000, whatever. He said he got there. He went to his hotel, blah, 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 blah. He went and met a guy that he was planning to meet, and he sat down, had a meal. And then he said, okay. And then he pulled out his money and started to pay, you know, count out money. And the guy said, what do you think you're doing? He said, well, I'm going to pay for this. He said, with what? He said, with money. He said, put that away. That's useless. And he's like, what do you mean it's useless? He says, nobody accepts money anymore. What year do you think this is? And he's like, what? And he pulled out his phone, WeChatted the money. WeChat, think of WeChat as a hybrid between Facebook Messenger, PayPal, and like Instagram and all kinds of apps mixed into one economy, one service, one application. So everybody has WeChat. And then when they left the restaurant, Penn said, there's no way you can't use money. I guarantee you I can use money in this city. I guarantee I can find it like in a minute or two. He said, oh, yeah, sure, fine. He said, there's a homeless person. Perfect opportunity. He's going to take my money. He said, I don't understand his language. He doesn't understand mine, but I guarantee you he's going to see this money. He's going to understand what I mean. Penn said he walked up. He started pulling the money out and started to like pull it out, like count it. And the guy, the homeless person, put his hand on the money, pushed it down, opened up his jacket, held up a QR code on his necklace, and then pulled out his phone and pointed to the phone to the QR code and pointed to Penn. He wanted WeChat money, even homeless people. And the guy said, literally everybody in this country has a phone. If you don't have a phone, you cannot survive. Period. That's how everything is done now. That's peak phone. If that's not peak phone, I don't know what peak phone is. When homeless people, every homeless person has a WeChat account, and that's how they get money. So that story just blew my mind, completely blew my mind. He said he did find a place that accepted money when he went to a propaganda museum. Literally rode a bike neighborhood, went down beneath a house, propaganda museum, where all it was they were looking at things that were outlawed by the country because they were time of war propaganda things. And that guy took money because, you know, he didn't want to be reported to the country. And hopefully Mark shows up again really soon. But that's the kind of story that absolutely made me crazy. And yes, Ivor in the YouTube chat said exactly right. It's worth $1,000 because that's what people are prepared to pay for them. He's absolutely right. The majority of non-hardware costs are marketing related. I absolutely agree with that too. Hey, Mark.
Welcome back.
I blame the kids.
Yeah, it just went away. I don't know what happened.
It could be worse, you know, but yeah, Ivor in the chat said, it's worth $1,000 because somebody is willing to pay $1,000. And he's right. It's perceived value. You know, do you really think a BMW cost, you know, $60,000 to build? No, it's perceived value. You know, and if people are willing to pay it, that's how much it's willing to be sold for. This is the old sports trading card market. Whenever it tells you what a card is worth, that's not what the card is worth. That's what somebody is willing to pay for it.
Yeah, I have that conversation on Craigslist quite a lot. Somebody says, you know, I'm trying to sell this thing that you could buy new for $300, but this one's 8 years old and I want $295 for it. I was telling them, that may be worth that to you, but it's not worth it to me. Let me know when you're tired of looking at it and ready to sell it for $50. Value is all about what people are willing to pay.
And I have to tell my coworkers the same kind of thing. I said, just because you see 20 people on eBay selling this one thing for $200, that means they're selling it. That doesn't mean people are buying it for $200. Just tag those sales and follow them, and you'll see they're not selling, you know, or they're going to bring the price down kind of thing. So here's a totally tangential question. Steve Cherubino was on the 24-hour live stream. At one point in time, he asked us, how would you solve this? He's a Craigslist junkie. He actually wrote an ebook back in the day on Craigslist and how to use it. And he said he's always looking at like used computer hardware, used laptops, because he's always looking for that, you know, real good one at a good price kind of thing. He's literally being inundated in his area with basically fake postings where it says laptop, you click on it, and then it says, get your phone fixed here, blah, 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 blah. And he said he's even contacted the companies that are the phone numbers, and they're real companies in his area. And he's told them, look, whoever you're doing your marketing with is scummy. Stop doing this. And he said he's reported them to Craigslist 100 plus times, and it doesn't seem to do anything. Are you experiencing any kind of Craigslist spamming?
Absolutely.
And is there a way around it?
Policing and deleting of posts is the only way to do it. But yeah, Craigslist as a company has always been very hands-off. And, you know, I just don't think that will ever happen.
Yeah, that's what I told him. I said, look, I hate to say it, but either you have to get a developer to make you an app that you can flag something so maybe it can learn and avoid them in the future. But I don't see any way to do this because Craigslist ain't going to react to it.
Yeah, I mean, that happens all the time. You know, you've got to search for, you know, guitar, and you get phone cases for $3.99, you know, and they just word salad. It's the old spam thing. They just throw up every possible tag and it gets in the search.
Yeah. Going to do a quick app here because, you know, we need to do at least a couple more apps, and I'll take responsibility for that. This is an app I saw at least on one other show, and it's the kind of app, even just saying the name, and I almost want to throw up in my mouth a little bit. Swoot. Podcast with friends. Emoticon smiley face. Ah, Swoot Inc. News and magazines. 52 reviews. T for teen. Completely free. No in-app ads. No in-app purchases. That means they're selling all of your data. 4.3 average reviews. Updated April 23rd, 2019. 27 megs in size. 1,000 plus installs. Current version 1.41.0 requires Android 5.0 and up. There's nothing about this that I find intriguing or desirable. It's basically like humble bragging about what podcast you listen to. Who, I mean, do you really want a constant ongoing stream of what somebody else is listening to? Don't you have enough stuff to listen to for yourself?
Yeah, well, I mean, people like to share. Goodreads is a thing. You know, people like to share what they're doing. SoundCloud was essentially the same kind of thing. So there is, can be a social component to it for sure. But I just, to make that the killer feature is kind of silly. This thing is, it's been out 6 or so months. It's got 1,000 downloads. And one of the reviews says, all my friends have, I love how it shows me the podcast that my friends have listened to. Well, look, if you're the developer, if you're writing that, because there's no way of 1,000 people, all your friends are on that.
Or they don't have very many friends. If I listen to, and here's the thing, I don't want to know everything that Mark is listening to. I don't, because you're going to listen to some crap. You don't want to listen to everything I'm listening to, because some of what I listen to is going to be crap. Wouldn't you rather me say, hey, Mark, here's an episode of this show. Yeah. Maybe you should listen
to it. Here's the thing I think you'd like. Yes, I agree.
Yes. And that's available in all podcast players by going to the little top menu and hitting share. And you send out a link to the show. And even, here's another way that Podcast Addict has this app crushed. Podcast Addict, you can also pause the show and say, share this place in this podcast with a share link. I don't see that being available in Swoot. In fact, Swoot is so friggin' lazy, their whole description is maybe 35 words. So I don't, this company must have just had an injection of finances in order to do marketing campaigns. Because I've literally heard this app now mentioned like 5 times in the last 2 weeks on random blogs, random websites, and random podcasts. And there is nothing about this app that looks intriguing or desirable as far as I can tell. But it is another podcasting app. So if you look for more podcasting apps that you want to share every single thing you listen to with somebody else, then I encourage you to check out Swoot Podcast with Friends. Emoticon smiley face.
All right. I understand your vitriol and I'm not going to rebut it, but I will say it is nice to have podcasting thought of as a social thing again. You know, you and I have been doing this a long time, but most of the rest of the world still hasn't really even heard of what a podcast is. It's a thing they've heard mentioned once in a while. It's not something they're really sure about it. So I encourage apps of this type. I prefer they be quality apps, and this one just doesn't look like a quality app, but I haven't downloaded it, so I can't really be sure. But it is exciting to me that there is a market for this that somebody's trying to capitalize on.
And that's why I'm upset, because I want hand curation. I want hand curation. I don't want trending list of what's popular. I want people I can trust to say, here, this is a good episode. And I don't think this app is the one to do it, is what I'll say. It's one of those things, you know, as far as I know, this is the first app to try to do it. And Mark, like me, you're seeing a lot of things. It's rarely the first person with the idea nails it on the first try and is very successful. I like the idea of disjointing social networks away from main silos and spreading them out kind of thing. Because maybe if I see Chuck Norris Japan handle on this application, I think they're cool, maybe I'll be able to find them on another social network and, you know, hang with them about something else. But I want hand curation. I do believe curated content from trusted sources is like Web 3.0 kind of thing. It's going to be very important.
It's fine for people 40 and older. Kids don't want hand curation. They want the fire hose.
Oh, yeah, they do. They get it all the time. It's just from a YouTube channel.
They want the fire hose. They want all the things all the time.
But that's the only way that kids find games, from hand curation from YouTube channel. And right now, games are on the angle in 2 years to make twice as much money as any Hollywood movie establishment kind of thing. You know, it's all about buying those people to push that product.
There's that.
It's all about the money. And, you know, that's a sad fact of life. But podcast still hasn't quite got there yet. And then the other podcast related thing I think is absolutely funny is the complete and total meltdown of the first week of Luminaries, a podcast network is what I'll say. But they were doing a couple things that are very unforgiving as far as podcast creators are concerned. One of them, and I love how this article makes it sound like this is one of the only places that's ever done this, but they basically cash publishers' shows and then redistribute them themselves. I can tell you almost 50% of the podcast things I've seen in the past to pop up do the very same thing. So they obfuscate all your download numbers. Now, of course, they, in this article on the Verge, all they complain about is they're obfuscating your download numbers, thus making it harder for you to make yourself marketable to advertisers. It isn't just about advertisers. It's just about knowing your market, knowing your popularity, being able to pick up on trends. Are you going up in numbers or down in numbers? Are you big in the U.S.? Are you big on the West Coast? Are you big on the East Coast? The way they were doing it, they were basically caching all the MP3 files and then redistributing them themselves. So me as a podcast creator would only see one IP address one time hitting my show. So that's not cool. You had a couple big names in air quotes, big fluffy translucent air quotes, big names pull their show off of their network and basically said that you cannot carry my show anymore. Among them, Joe Rogan, something experience or something, I don't know. And a couple other ones, Blockbuster hit the Daily, Gimlet Media, and Anchor all like said, do not publish our content on your network. It also looks like they were actually inserting ads into other people's shows, which goes against a fair amount of copyright, what's it called? CC, Creative Commons. A lot of people who know about licensing and podcasts publish under Creative Commons share alike no commercial use. So they were also violating copyright licenses by inserting ads into content. I don't think in 3 months this Luminaries is even going to exist anymore. I think a lot of people put a lot of money into a very poor idea of how to make money from podcasts.
Well, no, they knew exactly how to make money from podcasts. They wanted to make all the money. And, this is all, it's still primarily an eyeballs medium. And you need to be able to prove that you've got the eyeballs before anybody will give you any money. And they wanted the proof. So they wanted it, like you said, they wanted to insert their own ads and they wanted to be able to collect the data. I don't think they were, that they misunderstood the mechanism at all. I think they perfectly understood it. They just thought that other people didn't understand it. And they thought that these content providers would be happy to just not get credit for a download.
I mean, maybe 8 years ago, people would have just been happy to be recognized and being on somebody else's platform. Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, what they're doing is not unlike what Libsyn does. And people praise Libsyn for it. Uh-huh. But the difference is the transparency. You know, Libsyn is transparent about what they do.
Right. And you as a creator typically pay Libsyn right. for the right to use their service. Yeah. It's just one of those things. I'm always amazed at what companies are trying to do in the podcast world. But they're going to keep doing it. One app I want to bring up again, and it's really a selfish link is what I'm going to say, Mark, is Podnuts host a Mattermost instance, Mattermost, think of it as elegant IRC or Slack, but private Slack, not hosted on somebody else's server that they own, but on a server that Podnuts actually owns and controls. It's actually being hosted on a DigitalOcean droplet. And I installed the Mattermost beta on my device. We had a server upgrade thanks to Charles. Charles is the guy helping me admin it. In return, once in a while, I buy him a hard drive or headphones or something. And I will say this is unbelievably now smooth, polished, and running. And it's hosted in such a manner. It's not Google indexable. It's not searchable. You can freely talk about whatever you want to talk about on the server. You don't have to worry about, Google seeing it or somebody else kind of thing. And it's under our control is what I'll say. So for right now, we're still running the Mattermost server. And if you want in, just shoot me an email, aaa@podnuts.com or mail at podnuts.com and I can send you an invite. And it's an easy way to chat with other Podnutsians without, Facebook.
Or Google Plus, which is no more.
Yes, without Google Plus. And we're going to keep saying that until Google brings it back. Oh, wait.
Yeah, they listen to us.
Yeah,
I don't have a Google
Home. Here's the other one.
They'd be listening to me, but I don't have one.
Oh, yeah. By the way, I'm probably going to be giving away a Google Home Mini. I'm getting one in the mail on Saturday. I've been a Google Drive 2 terabyte subscriber now for at least 2 years, I want to say. So they just sent me a thing last week, said that they're going to send me a Google Home. I'm not even going to open the damn box. I'm not even going to plug the damn thing up. And my logic is, why would I? I still cannot find anybody to tell me anything that thing can do that my phone can't already do. So I'm not opening it up. I'm not putting my family, you know, my wife has a phone. My oldest son has a phone. My youngest son has a tablet. If they want to talk to their stuff, they can. We don't need another home appliance in my book. So I'm probably just going to end up giving it away because, you know, it's free.
All right.
Here's the other thing I want to talk about really quick, Mark. And this actually is going to be a tie-in is what I'll say. It's actually a tie-in to two other Podnut shows. Freedom Box was something I talked about at least 5 years ago when John Mad Dog Hall introduced it to me. It's changed, it's morphed, it's matured a lot since then. There's an Android app now called Freedom Box. There's also, back at their website, I want to say freedomboxsoftware.com. They have software you can download, you can install for Raspberry Pi 2, Raspberry Pi 3, x86 computer, VirtualBox, VM, all other kinds of things. And it's almost difficult to explain, but here's what I'm going to say. You install it on a computer, you then have to be intelligent enough to open a port on your firewall for the get the real use case out of it. And then what you can do is you can give, hypothetically, somebody else your address. And when they go to that address, they'll see a public side of this web server on purpose. Okay. You can literally log in as a user on your side of it and you can publish apps. You can publish text. You can have other things right there. So it can be like a blog type interface. And when they come to that domain, that IP, that URL that you assign to it, they'll actually see a public version of that site. Okay. Also on the Android application, you can basically have like federation going on. So hypothetically, I could have a server, Mark could have a server, other Podnutians could have server, and we could see in our interface all of those servers and visit them kind of thing, just like going to someone's Facebook page or someone's Twitter feed kind of thing. Now here's the real like special sauce in it. You log into the administration side and there is actually a lot of different software you can install. Among them, for instance, like Mumble Server is one of them you can install. Mumble Server is like voice chat where you can literally easily have, you know, hundreds of people at once on the same server. Other things you can install Tor, so you can have your own private gateway. You can open, you can install OpenVPN, so you can have private connections from anywhere back to your house, then out to the public internet if you need security where you're at. Things like Matrix, which is utterly, crazily secure text chat. Media Wiki, so you can store stuff on your own server. You don't have to worry about somebody else still leading it and then publish that publicly. Roundcube, email client. So you can literally install an email client on this, then connect it to other services. Hypothetically, I could load up Roundcube and connect it to gmail.com, podnuts.com, hotmail.com, yahoo.com, all these other web services, but have one interface hosted on my own computer where I can access it. And it literally goes on and on and on and on, the different kind of things you can install. Sync Thing, Mind Test, which is like a Minecraft server, Quazzle for IRC, Let's Encrypt for, you know, automatic SSL security. And it just keeps going on and on and on. I think this is actually pretty cool. I'm going to try to install it, give it a go, see how it runs. If it works really good, I might look at replacing the Mattermost with Matrix, but I don't see that happening for well over a month. And I won't just drop Mattermost. I'll try to make it as smooth a transition as possible.
So you have to have a Linux box running the Freedom Box server, and then you admin it from the app?
You can run it on Windows, Mac, or Linux, or you could literally get like a DigitalOcean droplet or your own VPS in the cloud, and you can install it. It will install basically on any Debian-based operating system, so any web server will happen. But they also have versions, I believe I saw on their website, for Mac and Linux. So you can host it on a Windows computer, or you can host it even on a Mac computer, I think. Well, they have VirtualBox instances to it, so with VirtualBox 64-bit or QEMU, you can install it on any operating system is what I'll say because of that. And then you can admin it either from a normal web interface, or you can admin it from this Android app interface. And you can browse other people's instances from your Android app interface as well. Hmm. I know. And that you, honestly, I love how you just summarize stuff, Mark. Exactly. Hmm. You know, because there's a lot of possibilities.
It's also a lot of work. I mean, this is a geek project for sure.
Well, here's my logic. If you get it set up, I don't see a reason why you could not then, especially in a virtual box, you could then just save the backup to it and then share it with, change the passwords and share it with friends. And you can go over to somebody else's house, host it for them. The real goal, I'll tell you this, the real goal, the end goal, the end game, if you will, of Freedom Box is they would really like to have a like Raspberry Pi already configured, already ready to roll. You just go to their website, you click buy, which you can do right now, 82 euros each. I have no idea what that comes out to. And you can buy a pre-configured, it's not a Raspberry Pi, a OmniBox, OmniMex, I never heard of it before, computer completely pre-configured, ready to rock and roll. You basically plug it up to your network and go, which will be, in the end, almost as much work, I admit.
Yeah.
But yeah, they like do have a goal to be, for it to be more like drag and droppable kind of thing.
82 euros.
They've been at this for a decade.
$91. That'll change by the time this gets posted.
$91. Yeah. Well, here's the good thing, Mark. They've been at this for over a decade. I knew of Freedom Box. I'm pretty sure it was over a decade ago, and they're still at it, which is good. It means they're not giving up on it. But it's bad because I really wish they would have made more progress by now. It's one of those things, it's going to like forever be in my scope, and I really hope it gets better. I haven't tried it for like 3 years, 4 years, so I'm going to try it again, see how much better it's gotten.
So just a quick unsolicited free ad for DigitalOcean. Man, if you need to host something in the cloud, that is the way to do it. They're not paying me to say this. They did write me a big check several years ago and didn't follow up. And so, but they made me a believer in that time. Great company, great pricing. Dead easy to put something in the cloud. So yeah, knowing that you can spin up a Freedom Box droplet takes all the pain about this away. You've got your own virtual machine hosted up there in the cloud on their multi-gig network. It's awesome. Yeah. Anyway, free ad there. Only because I really believe in them.
And here's the thing. I asked them about being an advertiser, and they said you're not big enough. And I'll still talk good about them because I do think they're that damn good. The interface is really smooth. I love the fact that you can easily spin down an instance and not get charged for it. You only get charged for the time you use. So it's unbelievably fair prices. They've given me now two or three free upgrades because their data centers have gotten upgrades. So I've gotten more RAM. I've gotten more disk space. I've gotten more bandwidth free. I didn't pay anything more. And it's just rock solid stable. And here's the thing. When you do the Freedom Box on it, you can say, well, I only want port 80 or 443 to be public facing. So, and when you do the administration, you basically do it on a different port. So you would have to first log into the VPS before you do the administration. It's another way to have security is what I'll say. And Ivor of the YouTube asked if you could run Plex server on this. Yes and no. It's not anywhere in the interface because they obsessively only support free and open source. Free and open source Floss software. Ooh, that took a while yet. Plex is nothing about it is open source at all. But because it's Debian, you can simply drop to a command line, do a wget, pull the Plex dev arm build down and run it, and it will install just fine. And Plex uses port 3 to 400, I believe, so you shouldn't have any conflicts.
The problem with running Plex on a DigitalOcean, and the reason that I didn't move all of my stuff over there, is their storage. They're very storage constrained. They're all about processing a network, and you have to offload the storage to the Amazon cloud or something like that. So if you want terabytes of movies stored on a droplet, that's just not going to happen. Their storage is the most expensive part of it and the most constrained part of it. So probably not going to be that. I was looking at doing, you know, backups there. I was looking at hosting things there, and the storage ended up being the Achilles heel. And I was going to do like a buy some S3 from Amazon and link it up. And in the end, it was just easier to do it myself.
Well, and I don't want to say you don't have the same constraints at your house, but You don't. I mean, every VPS provider has to limit something. They all have to, you know, pick their poison. Some people limit bandwidth. Some people limit RAM and processor. Other people limit storage. It's always, you know, one of them. And with a Plex server, you need bandwidth, hell of a lot of bandwidth. You need some RAM and some processor, and you need a heck of a lot of storage. So yeah. You're much better off just running it literally on your home network. I mean, I just downloaded all of Cobra Kai season 2 because that's how I roll. And I already, like, 3 people have watched it from my, you know, Plex server because, you know, that's how I roll. By the way, did you watch it yet, Mark?
No, I had not paid for my subscription to YouTube Red.
Yeah. You don't need it anymore, Mark. This is 2019. Oh, sorry.
But I will consider doing that in the very near future and, of course, not watch anything that I'm not legally allowed to view.
Well, I only share it with people that pay for it already. It's just more convenient because it's on my Plex server.
Yes. So I will true up my, which that's a great thing about the YouTube TV thing is you can pay for a month, watch it, and then don't pay anymore. That's what I did the first time.
Yep. Yeah. It came out on the 24th, which was Wednesday. I forgot about it. I literally forgot about it. Tuesday night, 12:30 or whatever. I do something. I'm back. Okay, let me just open up YouTube. I see YouTube. Cobra Kai, season 2, episode 1. So what did I do? I stayed up till 5:30 in the morning and I watched them all. Then I didn't go to work because that's how I
roll. We are verging on staying up all night now. So I need to drive this thing into the dock here. So let's empty that tank right quick.
Okay, really quick, if you need yourself download administration on your phone, here's the one that's gotten a lot of traction here in the last couple weeks. It's called Download Navi, Download Manager from a company I can't pronounce, Tachibana, General Laboratories LLC, Tools, 61 reviews, E for everyone, completely free to download, no ads, no in-app purchases. 4.2 average reviews, updated April 25th, 2019, 4.3 megs in size, 5,000 plus downloads, current version 1.0.2, only need .4.4 Android or up, 4.4 Android or up. Definitely an easy way to manage your downloads. This next one, Mark, there's something wrong with this one is what I'm going to say. Agatha Knife. This was a game that was on the Nintendo Switch. It's by Plug-in Digital Adventure, T for Teen. Oh, you betcha. This is not no kids game. T for Teen. A whopping one review. $4.99. No ads. No in-app purchases. Updated April 17, 2019. 93 megs in size. 10 plus installs. Version 1.0.1. Requires 4.0 Android and up. All I got to say is, this is a creepy game. Long story short, my son saw it. My son wanted to play it. Somebody in school told him about it. I told him he could play it, but I'm sitting with him the whole time while he plays it. The girl lives in the butcher shop. She loves the animals. It's her job to kill the animals. So she tries to make, she tries to come to some kind of agreement in her head that it's okay to love the animals and it's okay to love to eat the animals. And, if you're at all touchy, do not buy this game ever is what I'll say. Cause the whole time I literally tell the kid every 2 minutes, pause. I got to explain something to you, kid. Cause this game is definitely quite messed up. And if I knew what I knew, I wouldn't have let him bought it, but it was too late.
It's got 10 plus installs. Done. Door. Talk about cutting edge. 10 I know. Plus installs.
I trust me, I know. I'm going to do 2 more links quickly, but it's actually only 1 app. I haven't had a chance to fully play with this yet. Fair Code, I want to say is the guy's name. Fair Code writes Android applications, heavily privacy focused. If you are at all a fan of this show for years, you would have heard me mention the application called X Privacy. Long story short, you have to have root. Hypothetically, I load Facebook Messenger. I don't want Facebook Messenger to have access to my contacts. I say to Facebook, you cannot have access to my contacts. Hypothetically, Facebook Messenger then folds its arms and says, well, then I'm not going to work for you. And applications will do that sometimes. X Privacy will enable you to say, give this application fake data. Don't even give it my data. Don't block it, but give it fake data. And it could do that for contacts. It can do that for GPS. It can do that for all kinds of stuff. It can fake all kinds of data. So if you're if you care about your privacy, X privacy is like the holy grail, dare I say. And I just said some blasphemy. But it is. It's the great way to have privacy, and you can even lie to applications. But he came out with another app, haven't had a chance to try yet, called Fair Mail. It's essentially trying to be a more open, a more private, less restrictive mail application, completely open source. People who liked open source email for years used K9 Mail. K9 Mail had forever exploits and security things that had to be patched and fixed on it. It was not a great solution. It is on F-Droid. It's also on Google Play for some reason right now. The Google Play version is newer. If you go to F-Droid, I believe it's 1.35, 1.39, and on Google Play, it was 1.45, I believe. But it's literally like 6 megs in size. Completely free, completely open source, no ads, no trackers. They also promise there are no third-party services that this thing ever connects to. Nothing is ever sent. Nothing is ever tracked. Nothing is ever logged. Since the guy did X-Privacy, I got to try to believe him. So I'm going to definitely give this a go, give this a try, see if I can connect this. I will say I tried to install it. I tried to run it. Very first time I tried to run it. Google, in the last couple months, has changed where you have to now, for some applications, go in and basically greenlight them before Google will let you connect to a Google account from them. And with this app, I had to do that. So I didn't get a chance to do that. But I like email choices. You know, I don't like Gmail. I want to connect to other services, not just Gmail services.
Looks interesting. I'm happy with Gmail. So I'm not a customer, but looks interesting. Back in my tinfoil hat days, I would have been all over this, but you know.
Well, I have addresses at podnuts.com that I don't like forwarding them to doordoorgeek.com because then it becomes very hard for me to manage what came in from what account. And if I know if they're dedicated separate accounts, it makes it just a little bit easier.
All right, so let me run down the list of apps. We have RunP from Polygeek Entertainment, Swoot, Podcast with Friends by Swoot Inc., Mattermost Beta by Page Won't Load by Mattermost, Freedom Box Apps by Freedom Box, Download Navi, Download Manager by Takibana, General Laboratories Inc., Agatha Knife by Plug In Digital, and Fair Email available on F-Droid. All links will be in the show notes. So there you go. We missed a week last week. I think we made up for it this week by having an epic show. As always, thanks for having me. We talked a little bit on the show about, you know, podcasters making money. We talked about ads. You know, we don't do ads here because we're too small for anybody to care about us. If you want to continue this show, if you want to support this show, if you want to help out, honestly, the best way to do it is tell other people about the show. The second best way to do it is to go to patreon.com/androidappaddicts and pledge a buck or so. So the first thing, tell other people. Secondly, throw money at us. That's all I got to say about that. Dor, what are your final words for the night?
Yeah, and I mean, look, if you go to podcast players and give reviews, it doesn't hurt. But trust me, no podcast got popular because of podcast reviews. That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. Okay. Don't believe me. Darknet Diaries, 3-4 episodes ago, you simply pay $25 and voila, your podcast, even though it's been out for 10 years, can appear on the Apple new and noteworthy list because everything is gameable, especially reviews. Just look at Amazon. But if you're bored and you feel like trolling me, go ahead and give us a 5-star review. But put in there a rib or a joke, but don't call me Steve. That's all I ask. So you can do reviews, but I only ask you do reviews if you find them entertaining yourself, because you're really not helping anybody's show by giving them a review. You're actually helping the hoster of the reviews. So if you open up Podcast Addict and give me a review, you're not really helping me. You're helping Podcast Addict. If you open up iTunes and give me a review, you're really not helping me. You're helping iTunes. So, you know, just we're trying to be transparent, people. Again, thanks everyone for all their support. Thanks everyone for all their downloads. Social media shares probably are 10 times more valuable than reviews, and just gets our places in front of more eyeballs. Can't hurt, can it?
And if you're interested in more me, elementop.com, check out the other show I do there and the many, many shows I've done in the past.
Geek Rank, good stuff.
All right, everybody. That's it for the show. We'll see you next week on the next episode of Android App Addicts.
My name is Jeff Houch. I am the host of Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast, where we take live calls on the air to answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.